Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Are you saying you can run a 4.8 right now?
I think I can run a 4.8 right now, yes. I do believe
Let me tell
can.
You something. How old are you?
I just turned 40, not that long ago.
You got zero chance.
Thank you. Thank
zero.
You.
Oh, yeah, baby. What's up? It's Chris Sims Unbuttoned. It's Chris Sims. It's Ahmed Fareed. We got the big fucker today, Phil Sims. He'll be on the program here shortly. I think he's listening. But, yes, it is me, Chris Sims, and there he is, Ahmed, Mr. I shower sometimes. I brush my teeth one time a day, and I run a 4.8 40. I don't know, Al Riveron threw the challenge flag. I'm not sure I'm buying that bull crap right there either. I'm like my father. But what's up, man? How you doing?
No. So I definitely could have run a 4.8 40 before the whole quarantine thing happened, but I've just been eating this whole time and not working out, so it's probably over. That window is now past. So it was true at one point. I can hear Phil scoffing in the background.
Yeah, Dad, what do you think? You think you could have ever ran a 4.8? I'm not so sure I'd buy that either.
Hey, maybe back in his prime, somewhere between 17 and 22 or 3. Once he got out of college, it fell apart fast. And I was part of one of these guys. Willie Colon did it for where he works. And they brought a guy to the gym that we, you know, go to and work out or whatever. And he said he could run, all the people he worked with, he could run a 4.6 or whatever. And I came and looked at him, and they're asking me, I just happened to be there. And I looked at him, and I saw him. I go, look, you have no chance. You won't break 5. So, because I could just look at him, and, you know, I think I can guess right a lot of times. But so he gets down in his stance and runs, and I kid you not, he runs. He almost falls. He ran a 5.5. and they gave him like 4 chances. They finally figured it out. Just stand up when you start. And he did run better. He ran like a 5.3 or something like that. So, hey, if you don't sprinting, running fast, Ahmed, as I said last time, it leaves your body quick. And
right.
If you, as soon as you stop running for speed, I'm telling you, it's almost impossible to get it back. And that's okay. Relive those glory days. That's all right.
Well, I know it'd be hard now because it's physically painful for me to move faster than normal, faster than a brisk walk. So you're probably right. I probably couldn't do it. But as you hear, we got Phil on the show back today. Chris, we got an AMA. We got so many good questions from the homies out there. And so we'll get to as many of those as we can.
Awesome.
But can we start with something you guys have been talking a bit about on PFT, about jerseys and favorite jerseys of all time? And Phil, you're very active on Twitter. And so you took that question and you said, oh, you got a favorite jersey. And we're showing it right now to our YouTube audience. And it says Sims number 11. well, you asked. And so, I mean, obviously, that is a top jersey. And so that was Phil's number one. And it led a lot of people, and Chris included, to ask, well, I don't even think he has my jersey in his home. But you did prove that you have his jersey, and not just one. There's the Texas jersey, number 2, from back in
the
day.
The
and then, yep. And then also on the wall was the Buccaneers 2 jersey, which created a lot of waves because I don't think a whole lot of people have that. And also Mike Florio noticed that in the reflection in the glass, it appears as though, Phil, you're wearing a robe, a blue robe that goes down to your knees. And I don't know for a fact, but it does seem like you have bare legs below the knees.
Yes, I did. Yes. The show comes on early and I hear those that come up and I go, because I was sitting there reading the computer, the papers, all that stuff, and they get into that. And I go, that dummy, of course I got that down there. So I went right down and took the picture and everything. And, of course, never thought about the reflection. Thank God I got away with that. And but I had two of his jerseys, and I had my other son, Matt. I have him down there, too. A big picture of him is a great shot. And, I'm not big, really, and all that stuff. I went down, Christopher, I don't know if you know this, I took all pictures and everything down and everything and just all the Bigelow Tea posters. I hate me. And I took it all. Oh, my God. Between my wife and my daughter, I thought they were going to cry. What are you doing? I said, oh, my God. I don't know. I just get sick of looking at it. I get sick of looking at me. So, I hear you.
I'm the same way. I don't want any of that. Like, close the yearbook. It's over. And Dad, I did. I got that from Dad. I mean, Dad used to have, a replica Super Bowl trophy. It was, locked away in a closet nobody could see. Like, team MVP trophies from his years with the Giants. There's part of it's broken off. It's there was never any caretaking to those things in our house. I don't know. I kind of respect Dad for that. He just kind of moved on with life and moved on to the next phase. I try to do the same thing.
I do
have Phil Sims jerseys, though. I do. I have a few of them, actually. None framed, but folded up. I got a few.
Man, how'd you get those? Did you steal them after one of the games when I was playing?
Yeah, I think I had one from your game days. And then, somebody sent me, when the replica jerseys, the Mitchell and Ness came in, popular a few years ago. I got one or two of those. So, they're here at the house, certainly. And my Phil Sims sometimes puts on the Phil Sims jersey and runs around and acts like he is Phil Sims.
That's funny. Oh, well. Well, listen, I will do one day. I will keep a lot of stuff. I realize I got more than I thought, but I'm just going to get a little closet and just stash it all in there nice and neat, and it'll be there. And I don't know. Someday somebody can do whatever they want with it. That's it.
Yep.
So there we go. Let's move on.
Collector's item. That Phil Sims jersey is a collector's item. The Chris Sims jersey, a collector's item as well. I got to get myself one of those. The Andy Dalton jersey, Phil, in Cincinnati now is a collector's item because he has been cut by the Dolphins. That was the news earlier today. You look at some of his numbers, Phil. I feel like he almost gets a little bit of a raw deal. He's never been looked at as an elite quarterback, but he was a solidly above average quarterback, franchise leader. He leaves in Cincinnati in touchdown passes. He had four career playoff games, didn't win any of them, but he never threw a single pass while the Bengals had the lead. And so he was coming from behind or tied in all those games. He was a solid quarterback for Cincinnati, and now moving on, Phil, just what's your reaction to Andy Dalton's tenure in Cincinnati being over?
Well, of course, not surprised, and everybody says, who will trade for him? Of course, nobody's going to trade because of the money. That's one thing. So I covered many of his games during his career. We were down in Cincinnati, once, twice, at least every year, see him on the road against other teams, things like that. The thing about Andy Dalton is he played in those four playoff games. They didn't win. Probably the best chance they had to win was the fifth year he was in the league, and he hurt his thumb, maybe the second to last, somewhere that game.
Yeah,
and they had Pittsburgh beat. A.J. McCarron had them beat, and then Vontaze Burfict said, no way, brother, we're going to take this out of the hands of winning and put it with the defeat, with some of those penalties, all that. But you know what he is? He's not a big personality. Of course, it's hard to be one of those unless you're just really outrageous, like Chad Johnson having fun at Cincinnati. There was nothing that jumps out at you about Andy Dalton except he's really solid athlete, has a good size for an NFL quarterback, has a solid arm, but there's nothing that really stands out. And I think it kind of let him blend into there where people underestimated him. And then, of course, the old, he didn't win any playoff games, came up. And I remember doing a game in Indianapolis, and he was the quarterback, of course, in a playoff game. And I forgot, I think they were playing a running back. I can't think of his name. He was playing, a running back was playing wide receiver for him that day. Everybody was hurt. They had no chance of winning.
It might have been Rex Burkhead.
That's, I tell you what, it was Rex Burkhead. He was the slot receiver that day. And I just remember going, you know, I'm sitting there doing the game, trying to be, and I'm just going, oh, my God. There's no way, you know, Andy Dalton has no chance. They can't get open. Rex Burkhead is trying to run routes, and, you know, there's no chance. On the road, not much of a chance. So, you know, he was a little unfortunate. Probably had a chance his second year, I think, right, guys? Is it when he was down in Houston? They should have won the game, and actually, I think he might have made a bad play or two, if I can remember, that kept him from winning. So I thought that was one that got away from him.
So what do you think, Dad? What do you think's next for him? If you're Andy Dalton, are you going to a team like the Jacksonville Jaguars where you think, oh, okay, Jay Gruden, who drafted me, he's there now as the offensive coordinator. Do I go down there and roll the dice on, ooh, maybe Gardner Minshew, you know, trips up a little bit to start the season and they want to bench him and then I can go in and be the starter? Or do you try to go to a place – you know, like Seattle, that has no backup quarterback right now, and put yourself in a spot with a good team and go, okay, I'm not rooting for an injury for the quarterback that's in front of me, but if it does happen, I know I'm in a good spot to succeed with this team because it's got talent around me.
Yeah, you know, honestly, the way Pete Carroll has done quarterbacks over the years, Andy Dalton doesn't quite fit what he wants. I don't think he runs enough or fast enough to do it. And, you know, he looks for that, I think, more than the throwing and all the other stuff first. He wants his quarterback to be very mobile, and you know, he's kind of proved that point through the years with his backups. You know, yeah, if he gets a chance to go to Jacksonville, man, run. Take it. It's not because I don't believe in Gardner Minshew. Look, he could get nicked up. They're not going to be a great team. He's going to know the offense well, all that stuff. And maybe he gets a chance to, when he does play, hey, he does well, then there's a starting role. I don't know. I look at him now, he's got to be very fortunate to really ever get a chance to be a team starting quarterback. And everybody, I'm listening to the radio and TV, Andy Dalton to New England, start him. You know, if he goes up there, he will not be the starting quarterback in my eyes.
No, right.
You know, it would just be tough for him to be. You know, everybody just underestimates what's up there. We know Brian Hoyer knows the system inside and out, but I just think everybody underestimates what New England knows about quarterbacks, how they train them. And Jared Stidham, hey, again, he's a guy nobody knows, so they discount him. And he could have been Joe Burrow if it fell for him right. I studied him hard. I actually was trying to contact him during the summer, because I said, man, I like to throw with this guy when he comes out for the draft, you know, and everything. And it didn't work out. He was locked into what he was doing, whatever. But I remember watching his tape last summer of his junior year at Auburn going, or 2 years ago, I should say.
Right.
And I thought, man, I like this guy a lot, just like I did this past summer with Joe Burrow. I watched him. I said, hey, this is at worst a third-round pick quarterback. He can move a little. I like his arm. It's solid, all these things. And the same with James Morgan. I looked at him last year and go, there's a lot there to like to be a starting NFL quarterback. So, I don't know. Andy Dalton, I don't think it's going to be a list of five teams go after him. I think when you get an opportunity, then, of course, money will not be a factor. You can almost take whatever they give you. And I think Jacksonville would be a great place for him to land.
There's some underwhelming backup quarterbacks, Ahmed, as you know. I mean, we just showed a graphic to where, there's some teams out there where you look at it and you go, man, they're rolling the dice if their starting quarterback gets hurt. You know, hey, Dak Prescott gets – well, you know, the Dallas Cowboys.
Dak Prescott's a great one.
Right. I mean, so, we're going to hand over the reins to a team that we think's in the Super Bowl window, to Cooper Rush? I don't know if I'd feel real comfortable about that. You know, I also look at the Rams as a team that may be interested just because he would have understanding of the offense, and Zach Taylor came from the Rams and was in Cincinnati, and they have John Wolford as their backup quarterback. So that would scare me a little too there. Those are two right off the bat where I'd be scary. And, you know, I would have said the Jets maybe, but until they drafted, the guy you're talking about from Florida Atlantic.
Yeah.
James Morgan, excuse me, but Dad, I think you make a great point, because I've answered this question a lot, and I just got off the radio with somebody who asked me about, hey, do you think Andy Dalton will go to New England? What's their plan going forward? And I keep having to tell people, no, we're seeing their plan. Their plan was to draft Jared Stidham because they thought he was a guy that could take over from Tom Brady. You know, they're already into their plan. There isn't no like, oh man, Tom left us and now we're going to figure it out over the next 2 years. Come on, everybody. We know New England doesn't operate that way. And to Dad's point, it's like Drew Locke too. It's the same thing. Jared Stidham was a first round pick if he leaves after his junior year, just like Drew Locke would have been. But, oh, what happened? The team fell apart around them, and we all went, oh, he's not a winner. We can't draft him in the first round. I don't know. And that's really what happened. And that became the perception around that. And it's the same thing with Drew Locke in Denver. So, you know, again, I think New England's very comfortable with what they know and have seen so far to Jared Stidham, to Dad's point.
LA Rams, I've looked at them and go, what are they going to do at the backup quarterback? They really make sense of going out and getting a veteran that's proven to back up. Hey, if they get hot and this thing comes back together for them and all that, and Sean McVay unveils this new offense that he's going to come up with, new ideas and all that, you need a veteran backup quarterback. So if your starter gets hurt, your team just doesn't fall apart, which can happen. And we've seen it happen many times.
Seems like every team out there could use the safety net of an Andy Dalton. And you guys maybe could make some money out there because the betting sites have New England as the favorite. So if you don't think he's going there, Jacksonville's the second choice. You got Pittsburgh there. You got Las Vegas. You got Washington also is showing up on some these betting websites as a possible landing spot for Andy Dalton. But it looks like he'll be a backup somewhere out there, like you guys mentioned. And one of the big questions, Phil, that we've gotten, we went to the homies and had them ask us anything, and there's so many questions about the new backup quarterback in Green Bay, and that is Jordan Love. I'd like to get your perspective on this, and we'll start with a question, this one coming from James, who said, do you think Aaron Rodgers should force a trade and give Matt LaFleur the middle finger? What do you think Rodgers is thinking right now? And just what do you make of the Packers taking Jordan Love, trading up to get him in the first round?
I'm not gonna say I was shocked. That's way too much. But I was like, wow. I really like my son. You know, we do think alike. Unfortunately, he probably didn't like to hear that. We don't look alike, so he's really happy about that. I thought the Packers, I would have bet they were going to take a defensive tackle. I just was saying, hey, what happened when they played San Francisco twice last year? What happened when they played the Philadelphia Eagles, whatever we talked about, Monday Night Football? It was ram it down your throat. The Minnesota Vikings, run it down. I mean, when you get run on, it's hard to be a championship team. It really is, unless you have something just super. In the secondary, kind of like New England sometimes, they win the games even if their defensive front's not great because their secondary was so great. But I thought, okay, if it's not a defensive tackle, it would be a wide receiver. And the richest wide receiver draft we've ever seen probably, and maybe won't see another one like it for a long time. But they pass, and not only do they do it, Ahmed, here's the thing. We're talking about, I think, a project quarterback. I did not see what everybody else see, including my son. I said, I watched him. I said, okay, I see the potential, you know, but I don't see the, you know, a clear cut polished enough where we got somebody we can almost claim starting out the gate as our starting quarterback in a normal year. I definitely did not see that. My son called me, Christopher, and I said, well, damn, I heard you. Let me look at it again. So what happened, Christopher, when you called me?
Well, I called you. You looked at it again. You looked at it more. And then Dad, like maybe the next day, called me back. He's like, Christopher, I mean, I see what you're looking at a little bit with this Jordan Love. I mean, you're right. The good is really good. I mean, I think we were both, I was more floored by it. And I think I got, you know, tricked by it a little bit because Ahmed, you see throws where you go, whoa, that's Aaron Rodgers. But to Dad's point, when you're really evaluating a player, there was so much inconsistency in not only accuracy of the throws, but decision-making to where you just went, you know, and Dad ultimately said, Christopher, I know what you see a little with Jordan Love, but I don't think you can't rank him in front of Tua. You know, you just can't by what you're seeing and studying. There's no way. And when he said that to me, I was like, you know what? You're right. I'm wanting Jordan Love to be something that I like, and I see some potential there. But to be fair, no, I couldn't put him in the class of Tua, and I thought Dad made a lot of good points there.
Yeah.
So there's let me say this. Yeah. I didn't judge their team. He, you know, it wasn't like he was the receivers. You know, look, nobody got over. It was a terrible offense. I know that, and I didn't judge that. You know, I never do. I judge the player. You know, the team could go 14-0, and I can still hate the quarterback or not like him and, you know, things like that. So I just, you know, I'm always fighting this with people, you know, when you still hear it even from coaches and, well, this guy's drafted because he's good for our room. Oh, my God. One of my biggest pet peeves. I'm so sick of hearing about the quarterback room. I don't remember ever sitting one in 15 years going, wow, this quarterback room's not any good. We need to get some more. I mean, it's just stupid. It really is. But everybody says it all, you know, this. They got all these cold words that, to me, just mean nothing. I don't know what else to say about that. But,
yeah,
you know, but my thing is, we're in the NFL. Aaron Rodgers is still a really good quarterback. Really good. The team is almost there, and we don't do really anything to drive the team to the next level to make us a little more competitive. I mean, look, Green Bay had a 13-3 record. That thing could have been 9-7 as easy as it was 13-3. Let's don't get ourselves. That's what I saw. And when they went to San Francisco to play in a championship game, I thought, oh, my God, they have no chance in this. This is how's it going to change so drastically from one game to the next when they played each other and it didn't. So, hey, I'm just saying, we're looking at 1 year, this, but to look down the road, oh, in 3 years he'll be our starter. This is just what Aaron Rodgers did 15 years ago. I don't care about 15 years ago. The world has changed. It's now. It's now. Hell, Matt LaFleur might not see Jordan Love play if this thing falls apart in Green Bay. It won't.
Right.
But, you know, but Aaron, you said it right. I don't know if you've heard Christopher say this. Aaron Rodgers has all the cards now. It's total freedom, baby. Okay, you got 2 years, whatever. Okay, what are they going to do? You know what I'm saying? He can just do what he wants. And this is the interesting thing about it. Oh, Matt LaFleur is taking over control of the team. Well, okay. Okay, well, I don't know. I'm not saying Aaron Rodgers is going to go up there and just do what he wants, but I just think it does empower him a little bit for the next couple of years.
Definitely. And just to answer the question specifically, too, you know, because I got friends that are like, oh, man, you think they're going to trade Rodgers? They can't trade him for 2 years. They can't. It'll ruin their football team. He's got a $51 million cap charge this year. So if they trade him, that's $51 million for a guy that's not even on their team. Next year, it's north of $30 million cap charge. So it's 2 years of Aaron Rodgers, like Dad said, he's got the power now to go, you know, hey, I'm going to play. I just really think in my heart of hearts, this is what I think Aaron Rodgers would do. I think he's going to be very motivated. He's going to be chippy. He's going to have two really awesome years there and go, all right, I'm ready to move on. Is Jordan Love ready for you guys? Oh, that's right. I don't really care. I want to be traded. Get me out of here. And I think he's going to force his way out. I don't think he's going to play nice guy with Green Bay. I mean, if I'm him, I'm just pissed off beyond belief right now.
Let me ask you, you're sitting here, what did you think sitting there and then you saw the draft pick? Did you go, oh, I like it? What did you think? Or were you shocked? What was your thought?
I think I would love to say, because I'm at heart a contrarian, I would love to say that I like to see it. And, you know, part of me does see in the NFL, right, if you can have a backup quarterback, quarterback's the most important position in all of football. And if you lose your quarterback, you don't want your season to go kaput. So, you know, having a solid backup quarterback might be the smartest thing you can do if you know your starter is going to get hurt. But yeah, I was with everyone else. You know, you said all the things that Aaron Rodgers is going to have, leverage. He's going to have an ability to prove Matt LaFleur wrong in 2 years. But what he's not going to have is these high-flying wide receivers or weapons around him to do it, which is what we all thought they would get in the deepest wide receiver draft ever. So, yeah, I'm with you guys. Everyone's scratching their head on it and trying to figure out how it's all going to work together. And some people, Phil, were scratching their head on what the Eagles did with Jalen Hurts. Now, didn't spend a first-round pick on Jalen Hurts, but MIA Shelton asked, what are the Eagles doing? I don't understand the philosophy. Now, I think part of it with Hurts is you look at the Taysom Hill comp with New Orleans and you say, all right, if he's not the starting quarterback, he's still of value to your team doing a whole bunch of other things. Do you think that's a possibility with the Eagles and what they're looking at with Hurts?
Well, you know, I you guys have said all these things. Everybody's thought, yeah, look, he Taysom Hill, what he does down in New Orleans, it's good. It's very good for the football team and all that stuff. There's a couple things. One, he does not throw the ball as probably as well as Taysom Hill. I don't think he's as fast as Taysom Hill. So that's, you know, Jalen Hurts is more of a kind of a power runner. Yeah, he'll be good. You know, if he's throwing, has to move out of the pocket, he can pick up some extra yards. He's a his legs. Look, I watched him on a YouTube shot or whatever. I saw him squat for real, 600 pounds. So I think that's what he said. It was 600. I was like, oh my, he has got an unbelievable set of legs. Okay, so I see all that. And is he your backup quarterback this year? I would think he would not be the backup quarterback. He will be a guy that will play intermittently and do those type of things. And I think down the road, 1 year or soon, 2 years, whatever, they would hope he could turn in to the backup quarterback if they can refine his throwing. His throwing is not NFL average. I mean, it just, I know he wanted Alabama and wanted Oklahoma. I know, you know, so shoot, I just, Greg McElroy won a national championship down in Alabama. Why do we say he's a winner and draft him in the first, second round? You know, yeah. So it's, of course, you play for Alabama, Oklahoma, you're the quarterback, you're going to win a lot of games. Or, you know, that's just Georgia. Oh, you're going to win a lot of games. So, but I understand what they want to do. Did you have to do it in the second round? Me, just judging it before the draft, I said if you get Jalen Hurts in the third round, I'd be really happy with that. But I'm sure the Eagles were a little scared about it because I'm sure there was other teams that saw the same thing, probably third round. And the Eagles, if they wanted him that bad, they took him in the second.
Yeah, Ahmed, I mean, you know, I've talked about this a lot. Again, first off, this isn't like Jordan Love, all right? This is not the same thing. This is about, to what Dad's saying, I think a little bit of a weapon for the offense here for a few years. I'm with Dad. I question, you know, the weaponry status of Jalen Hurts as well. But nonetheless, I get it. It's a copycat league, and he's such a big name in the college sports world that, you know, the hype and everything around him is so big. But I don't think in any way, shape, or form, he is there to challenge Carson Wentz. Now, listen, Carson Wentz, you know, he's not one of the five best quarterbacks in football. I get that. You know, right? I'm not going to put him in Deshaun Watson, Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, Lamar Jackson class there, Russell Wilson. But he's that next group down. And, you know, people are crazy to think, like, Philadelphia gave him $100 million guaranteed. They traded away a bunch of draft picks to get him. They believe in Carson Wentz. He's special. I think that agrees with me there. I mean, he's one of those quarterbacks where you give him a few more weapons and you go, ooh, he could be the MVP of NFL, just like he was in 2017, should have been. So he's a special, special talent that proved to us he can carry the team even when the offense or players are not healthy. And that's really, really rare. That really is. And I don't think, you know, I don't think this is an indictment or a competition for Carson Wentz by any stretch of the imagination anytime soon. No way.
And, you know, I mean, this is always love. Even when I played, we would draft a quarterback in the sixth round, eighth round, and somebody go, oh, well, you worried a little bit? I go, about what? Will they draft the guy in the sixth round? Yeah, okay, well, let's see if he makes the team. And then, you know, okay, I'm not worried. I mean, everybody, when there's a quarterback, well, he's, competition. No. Jalen Hurts, when he sees the NFL, it's going to be an entirely different game than he played at Oklahoma and Alabama, where they were almost every single time when they took the field, they were by far the more talented team and all that in many ways, scheme, talent, everything else. So it'll be interesting. But point being is this. Carson Wentz is one of the few that literally and physically and emotionally, whatever you want to say, can carry a football team. His toughness, his talent, all of it. It was on display again last year. Those last four games, I mean, he was tremendous. And it was just about toughing it out. It wasn't about, oh, we got talent, we're going to win this way. It was just, even against the Giants, who were not very good. He somehow pulled that game out. It was just great throws at the end of the game, just being tough and kind of willing his team to do it. It's one of the few guys, Russell Wilson, of course, is a few that can do it with their mentality and just refusal to lose. I'm not going to say there's 10 of those out there in the NFL because there's not. So,
yeah. Eagles are going to be in contention there in the NFC East. Do you got time for a couple questions from the homies here, Phil, before we let you go?
Hey, let me tell you something. First off, I'm very frustrated about everything. And about, you know, I do all this work for the NFL. You know, I study all these guys. And then I actually was calling people up. I'll come on your radio show. I'll do segments, 2, 3. Just keep me on. And hell, we'd never get off the quarterbacks. I go, okay, that was great. Yeah, okay, thanks.
We got to talk quarterbacks.
We'll try to get off the quarterbacks here with a few questions.
Mind them coming up. Let's, you know, get into other things too sometimes. I actually do know a little more than just quarterbacks, but go ahead.
All right, so here's the Giants. You got the homies are clamoring for
the
answers.
Homies. We will come there and whoop your ass, Big Phil. Watch it.
Hey, you know what? You better be quick as hell, because if I get my hands on your ass, you're in trouble, boy. Okay.
Phil challenging the homies here to a fight. All right, Billy Wagner.
Hey, look, who we kidding? I mean, come on. I was a boxer growing up. I went 2 and 3. So there you go.
Billy Wagner's. We need a picture from Billy Wagner here to see how big he is and see if we really want to challenge him to a fight. But he is asking, Phil, how far do you think the Giants are from contending? So they were 4-12 last year, as you guys well know. They had just one winning season the last 7 years. They appear to be in a division where it wouldn't take a whole lot to get back near the top. Had a pretty good draft. Got Andrew Thomas. Got Xavier McKinney. Chris, I know you like him a lot. They added Blake Martinez, James Bradbury in free agency. So what do you think? The Giants 4-12 last year. How much better are they this year?
I think there's no question they'll be better for many reasons. One, get some people back that were hurt. You know, Evan Ingram won, Daniel Jones his second year. I'm really interested to see what the offense looks like under Jason Garrett for Daniel Jones. I love the offense. I love Pat Shurmur. What a get for the Denver Broncos to get him
with
a quarterback. And I just think of what he was doing up in Minnesota. I was anxious to see that down here with the Giants. It never worked out because the offensive line was just not good enough to do what he wanted to do. But I would say the Giants this year, next year, you'd like to see progress. And then so that would make it 2022 would be the year that they got to point to and go, we really got to be a factor by that time. And if they can accomplish that, that would really, I think, be, you know, that would be great. I think that's the best they can hope for. I still think they're a lot of players away from being a big-time contending team. But I thought their draft, Andrew Thomas, McKinney, two good guys there, a few good free agent pickups. That was great. And finally, I think the offensive line is going to be somewhat where they want it to be so their main guys can show their talent. That's the biggest thing about the Giants.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I agree. I don't think, like, the Giants are going to be playoff contenders this year, but I think they're going to be a pain in the butt for a lot of teams that do go to the playoffs and pull off a few upsets. Like, I would think the Giants flirt with a 500 record. I do. You know, the one thing I like about the Giants, you know, and I think Dad would agree with this, they're invested in big people. And I do like that aspect of them. You know, their defensive line is as big as any defensive line in football. And when you play in a division with the Washington Redskins, the Philadelphia Eagles, and the Dallas Cowboys, and the offensive lines they have, you know, they're going to be able to stand up to those teams physically and give them a tough time. And then they improve the offensive line. There's no doubt about it. And of course, Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley in years 2 and 3 is going to be a big boost for their football team as well.
Yeah, no doubt. They are Dave Gettleman, just like he did at Carolina. He was part of that. When I went out, I'll never forget the Super Bowl, going out and watching them practice. I did a few of the games before and watched them practice, but I was really up close. You know, they were cool. I literally could go stand in the huddle if I wanted to. And I would just remember watching practice going, oh, my God, this team is so big. And this was on a – I don't know if it was a third – I guess it was a Thursday before the Super Bowl. I could not get over how hard they practice. And I said something to somebody. He goes, oh, no, this is every day. These guys are crazy. And I just – so I think Dave Gettleman envisions that team, big, powerful, all that. And I guess the big question, too, is – I'm really anxious to see just the, I don't know if I can say a word for it, Joe Judge. What am I going to see from the team that I know is because of him? You know, right. We watch the Patriots. We know Bill Belichick. We know Kyle Shanahan. We know, you know, Sean Payton down in San Francisco. We know these guys. We know who they're about. We see their team. Yep, that's them and all that. And I can't wait to see if Joe Judge, how long it takes him to really put his print on the New York Giants.
One more before I let you go here, Phil. This one comes from Connor Gilmore. It's not about quarterbacks, not about the NFC East. He says, what do NFL players do if they have to take a piss in the middle of a game? It's a very important question, and I'm sure it has come up from time to time.
I know guys would say they would just do it in their pants. I just go, oh, my God. How would that even come about during a game? You're so emotional and you're burning and whatever, but some circle the wagons. They do it in the trash can when I played. But you couldn't do that now because, oh, my gosh. Maybe now they can go under the tent, I guess, if they have to. That's the thing.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
Right.
But we actually had a guy on our team one time, Ahmed. This story, I'll tell it fast. The trainer comes up and says, so-and-so has to go to the bathroom. He goes, and we're going to take him inside. He goes, what? Tell him just to do it in his pants. And the trainer goes, no, to Parcells. He's really got to go. Are you telling me he's got a poop or whatever? And he goes, yes, that's what I'm telling you. He goes, well, tell him he can't do it. Now, the guy, it was hot. We were in Dallas. He had two IVs. He had each arm stuck as we went in at halftime. We were on the field constantly killing him. That was back when the Cowboys were no good. And he finally just said, hey, tell him he's not going in. He might as well just do it in his pants. And whatever. So I'll kind of leave it at that. But we wore those white pants. And you sweat and all that, so you can just you can picture the rest.
Wait, so it happened? Gosh. He actually did it?
Oh yeah. Well, he had no choice. You know, the IVs and everything. He was so saturated, I guess, or whatever, and came out there. And no exaggeration, I'm telling you, it was at least 100 degrees on the field. That's back in the old stadium, you know. And that's all they kept saying before the game. The field temperature today is 112 degrees. I'm like, oh, I'm so frightened by that. You know, they were trying to, like, do this on purpose to psych us out. And we just went out there. I think it was Jimmy's, maybe his second year. I mean, we destroyed him. Maybe it was his first year. Or, no, probably his second year because we were kind of ready for what they did. But, you know, that story changed pretty quick, too.
Well, yeah, I can tell you my number one fear in TV has always been to throw up, to vomit live on TV. But that might be number two, literally. Number two might be number two for me. That would be just
wow.
Because that's what you're known as. That's what you're known as then.
Oh, my gosh, the throw up. I can't imagine doing that, that's for sure. Whatever. Hey, control your body. That's all I can say. But, you know, before you guys go, I just wanted to just a couple things. I thought we did some great. It was fun today. But I just look at teams, the draft. And it was just so unbelievable. LSU, Michigan, Alabama, Clemson, Georgia, Ohio State, and the newcomer, which I said to somebody, I said, man, they're the best-looking team I watch on film almost, Utah. I mean, those teams together, you literally could form an NFL team for real and compete. I think if you put them all together and, you know, just kept adding on to it. I mean, that's how – it was just amazing, the number of guys. LSU, what, 16 drafted players? Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, it's a 16 or 17. I can't remember exactly, but it's right there. But, yeah.
How many do you think they had signed as priority free agents? I mean, they were expecting at least 20 kids to go.
Yeah, right. I got to look that number up, but I would think it's at least another five or six guys, certainly. But, I mean, yeah, it just hits to the broader point, too. And I'm with you, Utah, but – man, Dad, when you watch college football, I mean, I don't know if you and I have talked about this, but it's just the SEC for team-by-team basis is just on another level from the rest of college football. Like, Dad and I talked about the Michigan-Alabama game the other night on the phone. They played each other in, what was it, the Citrus Bowl or something like that down in Florida?
Yeah, the Outback or something, yeah.
And, you know, we look at Michigan as football fans and go, yeah, they're, you know, they're not the cream of the crop, but they're that next group down every year where we go, they could be in the national title picture. I mean, they didn't even have the same look as them as Alabama. Alabama looked like they were playing a lesser team altogether because it just Alabama's full of grown men who were just beasts all over the field.
Well, it looked like they were playing Troy State. I mean, or right. Somebody. I was like shocked. I was turning it on and go, well, Michigan's winning, but oh my God, Alabama looks like a professional team. Well, of course, they're borderline are with so many guys, which is just amazing. And what's really cool, Ahmed, about it, when you like get doing all this draft stuff, and I really enjoy watching the players, and you know, I go through all of it and watch, and I go, you know what, why am I wasting my time? Let me just go to the Auburn-Alabama game and watch him, because he's going to be playing against a pro, or, you know, blocking a pro, pass rushing against a first-round tackle, whatever it is, wide receivers going against first-round corners. I mean, so you watch two or three of those games, and you got all your answers. You don't even need to watch anything else. And it's that was what was really fun. And the Big Ten, I give them a lot of credit, too. Look, there's a it's not the SEC, but they're getting where they're really – I'm not going to say they're close, but they're pouring out players left and right, and, you know, watching the Big Ten, there's just a lot of good football players, professionals, and a lot of good football teams too. So it's great. So that was a good, I think the fun thing about trying to see where everybody was going to get picked and just see how many teams really just kind of hit it. I mean, it just goes down the line. Indianapolis, I love what they did. You know, the San Francisco, Carolina, just some of their early draft picks. Of course, you guys have talked endlessly, I'm sure, about the Denver Broncos, what they did. You know, a sneaky team that did great, that's, you know, whatever they say, total rebuild, was Jacksonville.
Sure.
I think they did a terrific job in the draft. So that was what was kind of fun, watching teams. And, you know, I would think, last thing, and I'll let y'all go, I'm sorry. But, you know, you got to be a little lucky in the draft. In some years, you got to sit there and go, wow, it fell to us, just what we want. There's got to be other years you just go in there and you go to the draft and, damn, nothing's going our way. You know, there is a little luck involved where guys fall for certain reasons. Yeah, and I just looked at the Baltimore Ravens. A couple teams I looked at and I went, wow, everything just fell right in place for them to get the guys they want that fit their mold and all that stuff. So there's a little luck to it. What's that?
The rich got richer, to steal one of your phrases from the draft. I think that's one thing we both came away going, the really good teams in football got better in the draft. And that's what's scary, because I think it's, you know, not that it's scary, but I think we're going to still see the same crop of teams kind of dominating the NFL once again this year in 2020.
Yeah, it's probably so. Probably so.
Hey, hold on. So, Phil, I lied to you here. As I know you were kind of wrapping it up there. So I got one more question that I do want to throw at you. I'll throw it to your son first here, Chris. So this might be my favorite.
I got so much to do the rest of the day, Ahmed. I really don't know why. So, you know,
like all of us, right?
Yeah, go ahead.
So this one comes from Stephen Brown, and it really is my favorite question that I've seen, maybe that we've ever gotten for an AMA. And I've been thinking about it for a few hours now. His question is, if a roster could be made up entirely – from this year's draft, and Bill Belichick coaches them, would they win the 2021 Super Bowl? So here's the question. You got a whole team of everyone in the draft this year. How good is that team going to be, especially if they can be coached by Bill? Chris, why don't you start with that? How good do you think they'd be?
That's a great question. Well, let's see. I think if we go 2 years might be too soon. Okay, that's all I'd say. That would be my first thing. First off, I mean, yes, do I think Bill Belichick could build a really good competitive team out of the players that were drafted? Hey, he's certainly not going to be short on wide receivers. He's going to be able to pick a damn good quarterback. He'll have good tackles. He'll have stud defensive tackles. You know, interior offensive linemen, a little less than maybe we've seen in years past in the draft, but I still think there's enough there to go, okay, we've got a starting offensive line. You know, I mean, the talent there,
Chris,
to dominate the NFL, really, in a lot of ways. Yes. It's just in 2 years, could he get everybody on the same page philosophically, teach them the things that they need to learn in the defensive system, all that? I think they could be a really big pain in the butt for everybody in 2 years. I'm not necessarily going to say they're Super Bowl ready in 2 years. Maybe that would be year three and year four.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
by definition, it's a great question. It really is. And it just comes down to this for me, because the question, could they this year? And an absolute no. And here's why. Forget all the knowledge and all that. It's just, you know, it's you're just playing a guy. I hate to say these kind of words, even though my son throws them out there like they're, you know, nickels. But you're just playing against a bunch of pissed off men.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're men. And I know these guys coming out of college are this and that, but why do a lot of them fail? Because, oh, my God, it's hard and it's different. And it's like I'll never forget the guy, wide receiver for UCLA years ago, came in the locker room with the Philadelphia Eagles, first-round draft pick, didn't pan out. And he says, man, there's a lot of grown-ass guys here. They got kids. And this, and the way he said the whole thing. And I go, that's right. And, you know, I think the longer you know, there comes a point in that league, there's a period where you are just an angry, let's go, and you're not going to lose no matter what attitude, and you can't get that in year one from a bunch of college guys. They come to the NFL, just about every one of them has to toughen up quite a bit because they're the best. I've always been the best. I've always played well. Oh, my God. I haven't seen this guy before, though, across from me, you know. Those kind of things. So, yeah. So it's a great question, though. Most fans would say, oh, he could do it. Because another ridiculous statement, do you think Alabama could come in the NFL and win a couple games? No, I don't. I really don't think they could. But, you know, people believe that.
What would the timeline be? That's the question, right? So year one, okay, no, they're just learning. But in year three or four, if you keep this whole team together, because by definition, it is a team filled with 32 first-round picks. I don't know if a team has ever had that many top-of-the-draft guys. So, like, by year three or four, if they all stay together, could it be the best NFL team of all time? I guess it just depends on how the draft, how the players pan out. But it's just fascinating how long it would take for them to be a dominant team in the NFL.
The question was just the first rounders or your whole football
team? The whole draft.
Yeah. I would say year three. I think Christopher is right. Year three and four would really. I think you'll know the answer before then. But that would be the time to give them the greatest chance to gain experience, to grow up as men, do all that, get everybody in the right spot. You know, all that stuff. So it's a great question. Hard one really to answer, except that I'm just going to stick with what, God, I wish I could remember his name, little small receiver from UCLA.
Freddie Mitchell,
yes. Oh, my God. But it was the funniest thing to see him do that, and I just go, he's right. And, you know, even as a player, what I was as a rookie, just play. You know, I'm out there. I don't know what the hell's going on. But just throw it. I wouldn't read. Just throw it in there. Why'd you throw that pass,
Bill?
Well, to your point, too.
Well, to your point, too, just before you go, you know, yeah, explain that to people. Like, when you were a rookie and you got underneath the center in one of your preseason games, you had to play the Pittsburgh Steelers, you were very aware that, oh, man, there's a lot of grown-ass men across the ball, and you were in awe of that a little bit.
I walk out on the field in the second half of the Steelers preseason game, and that's their prime. They're going to go on and win their fourth Super Bowl that year. And I thought, oh, good, they'll substitute all the people out. Well, I go running out there. I got a bunch of new guys with me, free agents, draft picks. We break the hull, I go up the line of scrimmage, and I said, holy Christ, the starting defense is still in. And I go, damn, there's Mean Joe Green. And I look about, 3 feet from me is Jack Lambert. And I remember going, damn, he's tall. I mean, he's a tall 6'5", and skinny as hell. And, of course, he's barking out orders. He has no teeth. And I'm like, this is unbelievable. it really was. Jack Ham. I mean, just everybody. L.C. Greenwood, Mel Blunt. My God, Donnie Shell at safety. Probably off that defense. I don't know. Somebody once said 7 or 8 Hall of Famers.
Right. I think so. It's around that. Yeah.
It's something crazy. But, yeah, when I walked out there and saw them, I was like, oh, my gosh. And just to finish the story, so we play, whatever. It was a great experience for me. And I did complete my first two passes for like 60 yards. And then my third one was intercepted and run back for a touchdown. But it didn't deter me. I was still 2 for 3. But but 8 years later, we're down there playing a preseason game. We actually play into overtime. I played the whole game. And we beat them. I throw a touchdown pass to win the game. in overtime, whatever. I'm walking, you know, across the field, whatever. Mean Joe Green comes up to me, puts his arm around me, and goes, "My man, boy, you have grown up." It just was, you know, it was great because I remember he said a few things to me my rookie year in that game. Nothing bad. He just said some things like, "Hey, if you guys don't get it figured out there, you ain't never going to get a playoff now. Let's go." Like, he was trying to pep us up. Get this thing together over here.
Right.
It was really a great experience. And so that kind of explains it to you for you, Ahmed, that what a difference is when you walk on that field the first time. So.
All right, Big Dad. You the man.
Okay.
Thanks for coming on.
All right.
On.
Well, that was great. Great draft talk. But it was good listening to your homies. I don't want to get them mad.
Okay,
but
good.
Thanks for having
me
on.
You the man, Dad. Thanks,
okay,
man.
Guys. Have a good
Later,
day.
Phil.
See ya.
You Later, too. Phil.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Yeah, you don't want to. I've seen some, because some of the pictures from the homies that they're on Twitter. There's some big homies out there, Chris. We don't want to make them mad. So it's always good to get your dad's perspective on all that stuff. You could tell he wanted to talk about the draft and the teams that that he thought did well and some of the colleges out there. It really is impressive when you look at these colleges like LSU, and you know you're hearing a lot more of it now with the NCAA going to pay. You know, can they be compensated, some of these players, for their likeness? And it's like, well, is it going to throw off the balance of power in college football? There is no balance of power. You got like six or seven super teams,
right,
and then you got everyone else.
Exactly right. And, you know, yeah, Dad made a lot of good points about that. Those teams are certainly, you know, in the upper echelons. And, hey, to me, one of the things that and we'll have Dad back on again, too, so he can talk more about the quarterback and the draft. Hey, I mean, we got – not a whole lot of news to talk about over here the next few weeks. And we're going to continue to dive into this type of stuff. But man, the fact that Ohio State had the top three picks of the draft, right, all in one locker room, to me, that's still just mind boggling to think that. And it just tells you, yeah, the type of talent some of these schools are recruiting right now, and just, you know, how they're kind of on another level as compared to the average college football teams around college football.
All right, Chris, let's get to a few more questions here. You ready?
Let's do it. Yeah.
All right. Kevin Brady asks, he says, "Hey, Chris, big fan of you and your pod since your early days at Bleacher Report. Having watched a lot of college film recently, who are a few players who you were really impressed by and who chose not to go to the draft or were ineligible?" And he says, "P.S. Ahmed, your smile is A1 considering your brushing habits." So a lot has come out about me and my hygiene or lack thereof. I don't like that in this quarantine.
Well,
but you've watched a lot of film. You've seen, what is it, Jamar Chase from LSU, top receiver over there. You know, of course, Trevor Lawrence at Clemson. Who has jumped out at you for guys that weren't eligible for this draft but you might have come across in your film study?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, one, you know, Jamar Chase is probably the one that jumps off the screen to me more than anything. And then, you know, you get into the Dexter Lawrence conversation when you're watching Clemson and some of the games they played. You sit there and go, man, yep. Yeah, I mean, it's as advertised. I don't ever like jumping the shark and going, oh, that's the number one pick of next year's draft. but that's one I feel pretty comfortable in. Not to say he's going to be number one, but it's top five, whatever it is. It's going to be very high in the draft. It's special there. Hey, the Ohio State quarterback, you know, there's something there, too, to look at him. Again, if you like guys like Jalen Hurts, you know, I think Fields throws the ball better than Jalen Hurts and is every bit the good as athlete. So I think there's more potential for him as a quarterback. There's a tight end down in Miami, and I don't know his name, but he's number nine. Okay, that's good. I would be shocked if he's not the first tight end off the board. Are you looking it up right now? Because he's a beast. Yeah. I know he jumped out to me a lot. Hey, the two other receivers at Alabama, number 17 and number 6. And I'm sorry to my man Kevin Brady. I just, you know, I don't know these names. But number 17, I believe, is Waddle. Number 6, I don't know his name. But you could argue those were the go-to targets for Alabama this year, even more than Ruggs and Jerry Jeudy. So they're going to be first-round talents that I saw, certainly. So I think those are some guys that just jump off to me, and I'm probably forgetting a few too. Yeah. But regardless, I think that that's a pretty good base as far as guys that I certainly jumped off the screen to be. Do you got that Miami tight end's name?
Pete Demolemolitis does. He always comes through immediately. Brevin Jordan, the tight end from Miami.
Beast. I think he's a first-round tight end. If he came out this year, he'd have been the first guy off the board. So that certainly is one guy that, yeah, he's a freak of nature. Okay. He really is. And I'm looking forward to evaluating him next year.
Good segue to Brian Neal, who asks, are the Bears better now? Was it dumb for them to pick a tight end? Cole Kmet is their first-round pick of their first pick of the draft. We had holes in the O-line, corner, safety. They could have addressed sooner. We didn't even draft a safety. So what do you think about what the Bears did?
Well, I like the Bears. You know, the big thing that jumps out to me about the Bears, I mean, you know I'm a Cole Kmet fan, and I'm a Jalen Johnson fan, the Utah corner. Now, listen, I didn't think he was like a first-round talent, but I think a lot of people did. I think a lot of people thought he could maybe go at the end of the first round. My father, I mean, he'd be one to tell you that he really liked Jalen Johnson's game, and I did too. So I think they killed it with their first two picks as far as guys that are going to contribute to their football team in year one. And I know they have, like, you know, a good amount of tight ends there in Chicago, but they don't have any like Cole Kmet. Cole Kmet's special. I mean, he's a really good run blocker, and he's really good in the pass game. And Matt Nagy, I mean, he came from Kansas City. You know, those coaches came from Philadelphia, and you know they believe in good tight end play. You know, he had Travis Kelce, who could do so many different things to him. And I think, you know, again, the offensive line is not perfect in Chicago, but I didn't look at it as like, oh my gosh, it's a necessity. And if they don't draft somebody in the first three rounds, they won't be able to do anything. No, I think Chicago just needs to be a little tougher in their run game attack and be a little more, what do I want to say, just stubborn with that to a degree. They're a little much into that shotgun and pretty type offense like Kansas City, except they don't have the pretty type weapons to make that happen. So I think their approach has to change. But, man, when you get into Jimmy Graham and Cole Kmet and then a few of the receivers, you know, the running back position is better for Chicago. I have no problem with Chicago. Again, this is a team that's got a defense that's already in place that's one of the best in football. It's just about Matt Nagy adding creativity to that offense. That's my biggest thing. And, of course, the quarterback position, where I do expect Nick Foles to be the starting quarterback when all said and done to start the year.
Yeah, and there it makes sense. There were a lot of you spoke about receivers with the Bears and what can they do there. A lot of questions from the homies about the receivers because this was one of the deepest receiver drafts that we have seen and will see for many years to come. John Pascal says, are there any similarities between Mims and Metcalf's draft fall? So Denzel Mims, a lot of people high on him. You were not quite as high on the Baylor wide receiver. He was the 13th wide receiver taken, 59th overall. Last year, DK Metcalf was the 9th wide receiver taken, 64th overall. So they were taken in similar parts of the draft. Do you find any other similarities there between those two receivers?
Well, I do think, you know, Denzel Mims to me, you know, and again, he was one of those guys that was not my top five receivers, but when we did our top five receiver podcast, I kind of said he was like an honorable mention.
you know, because he does play to his speed. He ran, what, 4.37 or 4.38, something like that at the combine. And when you turn on the film at Baylor, it's legit. I mean, you can see him take off down the sideline and go, whoa. I mean, he kind of looks like A.J. Green when he takes off and does stuff like that. He's got that type of body. Now, I'm not going to say he's as physically impressive as DK Metcalf. DK Metcalf was one of those guys, Ahmed, and you were doing pods with me last year where I just went, I don't get it. I don't know how he's not the first guy off the board. He's the biggest, the fastest, the strongest. You know, it was, again, overanalyzing by the NFL crowd. Denzel Mims, you know, I do know he had the hurt hand last year. And I think ultimately that's what really hurt him in this draft process. I think teams looked at him and go, man, he's got the ability to catch 50-50 balls and rip the ball out of the air and certainly did it a decent amount. But I think overall it was a little underwhelming compared to some of the other big wide receivers in the draft. But I think this guy does have the potential to be a number one wide receiver. And I think he's going to have a big place in that Jet system right away. So not going to say he's the prospect DK Metcalf is, but I certainly think there's potential here for this guy to be really damn good. And certainly a guy that, like, defenses go, ooh, we need to watch him because he could be a 70-yard bomb over the top for a touchdown.
Steve McDetmer said, you the man, thanks for not spilling the goods on Brandon Ayuk. So that was he was thanking you for not pumping him up too much. And Timo Bucher says, what did your boy Kyle love about Ayuk? And I did think that was interesting because Ayuk was a guy that you mentioned, I think, when you were talking with Paul about your favorite wide receivers in the draft. And I know you probably talked to Kyle about the wide receivers. And so he didn't spill the beans that they were super high, according to some reports, the number one wide receiver on their board.
No, he did. He spilled the beans to me. I knew it all along. I did. You know, and I'm not going to lie. You know, I didn't see it quite as strongly as Shanahan or Lynch. I liked Ayuk. I'm not going to say that I thought he was, like, tied for the number one or number two receiver in the draft. I'll disagree there. But I will say this. My man Kyle Shanahan is about as good as I've ever seen as far as evaluating wide receivers. He really is. He's been with a lot of great ones. He's drafted some really good ones. He's an ex-receiver himself who was obsessed with the position and learned how to run routes from Ed McCaffrey and Rod Smith in Denver. So he's really nuanced there. That's his niche. And when he talks receivers, I always listen and perk up. And I knew he was on the radar for the 49ers in a big-time way. Listen, when Kyle Shanahan told me, man, I think this guy's Isaac Bruce, then, you know, and we had a conversation of, would people think I'm crazy if I took Brandon Ayuk at 13? And I said, you know, some might, but because of your track record, and if you say a statement like, I think he could be Isaac Bruce, that'll shut people up in a hurry. So, yeah, I tried certainly to be a good friend and not connect or show any connection and dots there between Ayuk and the 49ers. But I think what Kyle liked about him is, you know, there's certain things he looks in route running to go, not that he has to see every route, but there's little mechanical things he has a really good eye for to see in the feet, the hips, certain body positions that guys are capable and not capable of getting their bodies in to be good route runners with certain different routes. And I think he saw that Ayuk was very smooth that way. Let alone he's got speed to be over the top. He's got amazing hands. Shanahan's very into wide receivers who can rip the ball out of the air and not lose any speed when the ball's thrown accurately. Like you saw with Deebo Samuel last year. How many times did you see Deebo Samuel running over the middle, rip the ball out of the air, and running like a bat out of hell, right? Like no throttle or anything. Just zoom. He loves that. And I think what Shanahan also likes is you're not going to be able to pin Deebo or Ayuk to certain roles on that offense. You know, they're both going to be able to run speed sweeps or reverse. They're both going to be able to run over the middle. They both can beat you over the top that way. I think Ayuk a little bit more than Deebo, but it was an awesome pick by Shanahan. I mean, they killed it in the draft. They're the best three-person draft ever when I say that. I know they drafted more, but to get Ayuk, Kinlaw, and then trade for Trent Williams on the second day of the draft, I mean, as far as three big moves, I don't know if there was three bigger moves in the draft than the 49ers and what they did.
It fell their way, and John Lynch did tell Peter King that Ayuk and CeeDee Lamb were tied atop their wide receiver boards. So they're both there, 1A, 1B. Would have been fine taking them at 13, like Kyle was asking you if they should do that. But when Kinlaw fell to them, that made it too easy for them. They were as high on him as you were on him, thinking he's a top five talent. I mean, that's like best case scenario. Remember that question we got last time we did an AMA that was about, would the Colts have rather just kept that 13th pick and gotten Kinlaw? And you said, I don't think Kinlaw's getting there. He got there, and the 49ers did exactly that.
There's two things. One, I was sitting there watching the draft going, oh my gosh, Kyle and I had talked so many times, and I went, oh my gosh, we're sitting here and all, like you just said, all three guys are on the board at 13. Like, I don't think he thought in a million years all three of them would be there. And so when it got to that point, you know, I think that I thought he would take the defensive tackle just because he's rare, and then the wide receiver class certainly being deep, that you got to get the premium D tackle right now, because you can't risk that he'll be on there on the board later in the round. Like, you know, him and Brown were clearly ahead of the rest of the group. So, yeah, it really played out the right way. And two, I'm dying to know. I would love to know. I'm dying to ask Chris Ballard, would you have traded the 13th pick away if you knew you could have got Javon Kinlaw at 13? Because I would think in my heart of hearts, and knowing Chris Ballard a little bit, and certainly knowing how he runs his football team, which he's one of the best evaluators and GMs in the game, I would think he saw Javon Kinlaw a lot like, you know, I did, or some other of my coaches' friends around the NFL, where you went, he's a top five, a top eight pick for sure. He just won't be on the board for us at 13, so we need to make a move. I just wonder if he was sitting there like going, damn it, I gave this guy $22 million and traded away a pick, and one of those damn D tackles is on the board. I'll never know that, and I'm sure he'll never admit that, but I would love to know.
Because you might like DeForest Buckner, the player, better. Obviously, more of a track record. He's done it in the NFL. He's proven it, but you always have to factor in the money and what that, you know, $20 million locked up in one player prevents you from doing other things. And so it's not all about just which one would you rather have. It's like that rookie contract for the quarterback. That seems to be advantageous to most teams out there. All right, let's go over to running back. Real quick, Tom Canfell asked, if Josh Jacobs was in this draft, where does he rank as far as running backs go? And I know for a fact you're very high on Josh Jacobs last year. He did nothing this year to sour you on him. He did get hurt at the end of the year, but he proved a lot in that John Gruden offense. He was the 24th pick last year. It almost looked like we wouldn't have a first round running back this year, but Clyde Edwards-Helaire was taken with the last pick of the first round by the Chiefs. Josh Jacobs, was he better than any running back this year, and would he have been a first-round pick this year as well?
I think he would have been. I do. You know, I think he would have been the top running back in this year's class, too. I do. I don't have any doubt about that. Josh Jacobs just has a unique, first off, he's very smooth in the pass game. And I think you're going to see him take that next step and with the Las Vegas Raiders this year. You know, I know for a fact they think he's very capable of doing some of that Alvin Kamara stuff out of the backfield. But two, Ahmed, you know, he's very special in the fact of he can run through the tackles and run over a linebacker or break arm tackles, but has incredible quickness and ability to stick his foot in the ground or make jump cuts where nobody can touch him that way. You know, and yes, is he as explosive as a Jonathan Taylor, right? No, he's not going to take it 70 yards of the house that way. But a little bit more like a Clyde Edwards-Helaire, where you go, man, there's going to be a lot of awesome 10, 15, 30-yard runs where we're going to look at the play and go, he should have only got 4 yards there, but he broke a tackle, broke somebody's ankles, shaked out another guy, accelerated really fast. They don't have great long speed, but they can really accelerate, and they got 30 yards out of a run that should have been for a 3-yard game. And I think that's really where he was special. So, you know, I love Jonathan Taylor. I love J.K. Dobbins, and I love Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And I think he fits with Kansas City better than a Josh Jacobs does. But I think Josh Jacobs overall would probably still be the number one running back in that class.
I know you like Zach Moss as well. Eddie Killer asks, Will Zach Moss be a bell cow? So Buffalo took him 86th overall. They took Devin Singletary last year, third round, 74th overall. I don't think you're that high on Singletary. I think I like him a little bit more than what I've heard you talk about. I mean, he averaged over 5 yards a carry last year, over 700 yards, almost 800 in 12 games, only got 12 attempts per game, so wasn't running a whole lot, but was fairly productive when he did run. So you think, will Zach Moss be the bell cow, or will it be a 1A and 1B with Singletary?
I mean, Zach Moss was one of my favorite guys in the draft. I mean, he was a fun watch. You know, he's got a special running style about him. You know, I Le'Veon Bell-ish, the way he can move his feet and make people miss. He can run you over. You know, a little bit like we just talked about with Josh Jacobs. It's not going to be 90-yard, 80-yard touchdowns, but it'd be a lot of awesome 15, 20, 30-yard runs. I like Devin Singletary, you know. I like Marlon Mack in Indianapolis. But the thing I'll always say is, you know, we're in this era, and I'm not excusing myself. I do the same thing. And you just did it to prove my point, where the year is over and we just look at the bottom line and go, look, his stats were good. He must have been good. And they were. But there's a reason these teams drafted a running back in the second and third round, because I think they went away after evaluating the season and went, we left some meat on the bone. Like, yeah, Devin Singletary ran for some runs where it was a big hole and he got 25-yard gain. But I think there's going to be a lot of those runs where Buffalo Bills evaluators and coaches probably went away and went, man, a really top-notch running back would have got 60 right there, would have got 45. And I think that's what happened with Marlon Mack and Devin Singletary. Plus, you know, Devin Singletary, I always looked at it as more of a third down, Deion Lewis, James White type, who, yes, he can run between the tackles, but that's not going to be his forte. And with them running the New England offense, I think you're going to see Zach Moss run the LeGarrette Blount, you know, stuff. And then you'll see Singletary come in and be James White.
Here are a couple quarterback questions here. This one is not about the draft, but is some recent news with Jameis Winston. I thought this one was interesting. J.H. Hill 4 asked you on Instagram, can you talk about how Jameis Winston's stats for his first 5 years are better than Peyton Manning's first 5 years, but everyone says he sucks, but Peyton was never considered garbage? And so I looked up the numbers to see how similar they were, Peyton's first 5 years versus Jameis's first 5 years. Peyton's completion percentage, 62%. Jameis, 61%. Touchdowns per game, they both were tied with 1.7 touchdowns per game. Yards per game, Jameis has the advantage, although yards per game is up a league-wide now from when Peyton was first starting his career. But the big one, interceptions per game. I was waiting to see this one. Peyton, 1.3 interceptions per game. Jameis, 1.2 interceptions per game. So Jameis averaging fewer interceptions per game in his first 5 years than Peyton. Now, you just told me not to look just at the numbers, and I did it. But that was the question. What do you make of J.H. Hill saying that Jameis's first 5 years aren't that dissimilar from Peyton's first five?
Well, listen, you know I like Jameis Winston. I mean, there's a lot of things I like about his game. Now, I'd also like you to look up fumbles and see what the difference is there, because I would bet you Jameis Winston has significantly more fumbles than Peyton Manning as well, which will add to that turnover conversation. You know, but I think it's more about when the interceptions came and – you know, the spread of those interceptions. Yeah, early on in his career, I mean, let's go past the rookie year, where I know Peyton Manning threw like, you know, 29 interceptions or whatever else, broke the rookie record. After that, yes, was he perfect? No. He was good for about one interception a game. But also within that, they were winning football games. And he wasn't, okay, yes, one interception a game, but let's not forget, the game was always about Peyton Manning. I mean, Peyton Manning was drafted, and day one, they were like, all right, here's the keys to the Ferrari. We need you to drive this thing faster than anybody ever. If you don't, you know, a little bit like I always say with Aaron Rodgers, he was literally drafted, and they were like, all right, if you don't throw for 350, three touchdowns, and an interception, we can't win today. So that led to some of his mistakes as well. But I think it's more about the timing and when the mistakes happen. You know, there's a difference in throwing an interception in the second quarter and then throwing pick sixes in overtime or late in the game or making big mistakes like that, which have seemed to plague Jameis Winston more than anything. Let alone, I think Peyton Manning's interceptions were like a little more spread out evenly. Jameis Winston's came in troves, where you can specifically look at games and go, he lost them that game. He literally had six turnovers in that game where, you know, and then he might go on a run for 3 or 4 weeks and have no turnovers, but then all of a sudden he's back the next week and it's four turnovers once again. And I don't think you got that from Peyton Manning. I think Peyton Manning, you got more of a consistent of like, hey, it was three touchdowns. He threw his typical one interception. And for the most part came through in the big moments other than playing New England early on in his career. That would be my assessment. It's a great question. Yeah. It's a good one.
It is. Peyton, though, was playing with clear vision, and Jameis has been playing practically blind. So you got to factor all that in there. To who knows what the LASIK surgery will do for Jameis Winston? It'll be fun to find out if he hits the field. All right, a couple more here, Chris. Rob Brinker says last year Kyler Murray, Drew Lock, and Dwayne Haskins made your top 40 quarterbacks list as rookies. So which newly drafted quarterbacks would you include in this year's edition and why? All right, the caveat, you haven't looked at it yet, but from what you're feeling right now, do you think Joe Burrow, do you think Tua, do you think Justin Herbert will show up in your top 40 NFL quarterbacks list?
Yeah, and you know what's funny is I got a lot of crap for that last year. Like, how could you put them in there? You don't know. I mean, I put Kyler Murray as one of the five best scramblers in football, and people were like, you're crazy. You haven't even seen him play in the NFL. No, I didn't need to. He runs 4.3. He's going to be good at scrambling. He's arguably the fastest guy on the Arizona Cardinal football team. So it's okay to make those type of projections at times. I think right now I look at Joe Burrow and go, definitely going to make the list. No doubt about it. I mean, there's some back-end starters in the NFL right now. I don't need to see Joe Burrow ever play a game in the NFL. I know he's better than some of those guys. You know, Justin Herbert, I feel the same way about. I think I would have a hard time not having him in the top 40. They're probably not as high as Joe Burrow. I get that. And, you know, I look at Tua, and he would probably make my top 40 as well. You know, I don't love Tua. He's probably, for me, going to be somewhere in that 28 to 40 range right off the bat, somewhere in there. But nonetheless, going to make the list. Some of it is about projection, but, like, you know, I just to take an example of, I'm just trying to look at some comparisons here. You know, hey, Joe Burrow is better than Teddy Bridgewater. I don't need to see any NFL things. I know right now that Joe Burrow is going to be better than Teddy Bridgewater. I do. I feel very confident in that. I also think Joe Burrow is better than Tyrod Taylor. So there you go. I could just name a few names right off the bat. He's better than Ryan Fitzpatrick in Miami. So those are people I'm going to put in front of. I know they have experience, but they're not capable of making some of the plays that Joe Burrow is going to be able to make. Plus, I know Joe Burrow is smart. He executed a pretty good NFL offense in college. So I've seen enough to know he's better than certain guys in football already.
Last one, Chris. You ready?
I'm ready.
John Martin, would you ever want to be a GM? He's trying to figure out your future aspirations here because you look at so much film this month. You have a knack for it. You were able to single out Lamar Jackson a couple years ago as your favorite quarterback, DK Metcalf last year. It keeps happening. You seem to have an eye for talent. You've done it before with New England, Chris. Do you ever have that that itch to get back in the league in some capacity?
I definitely do. There's no doubt. You know, I'd be lying if that wasn't on my future radar at some point. I'm not like, oh, man, I need a GM job. I got to have it. No, I wouldn't want one right now. I really wouldn't. You know, I am enjoying my job at NBC. You know, they're compensating me very nicely for that as well. And, you know, I'm not having to work NFL hours. You know, I enjoy being a dad. That's really big to me, as it is to you. I know that. It was one of the reasons I got out of New England. I just was going, man, I haven't seen my kids in a year and a half. I don't know if I can keep living like this. You know, I didn't just want to wake up 20 years from now and go, man, I got a Super Bowl ring, but I missed my children's childhood. I didn't want to do that. I knew I wouldn't be able to live with that. So maybe somewhere down the road, it's certainly intriguing to me. I do love it. You know, whether how good I am at it, I don't know. I know I'm pretty good, but to your point, I know I've been around it my whole life and learned from some really good people, you know, in college. And of course, to be in the pros and learn from a Bill Belichick and a Josh McDaniels and John Gruden and Jeff Fisher, along with some other great people in the front offices and Mack Brown in college. And of course, just growing up in the household with my dad and being around, you know, the Bill Parcells of the world and a bunch of other giant players, you know, I got to play it. I understand X's and O's, and I've seen a lot of these guys in person to know some of the physical attributes you can look at times to go, ooh, that guy's got the look that I saw in player X when I was younger or when I was playing in the NFL. He looks like that guy, and that usually translates. So those are the positives I bring, but we'll see, man. I'm not trading in that for working with you. I mean that beautiful smile you have and sense of humor. I'm never going to find that in any NFL organization.
Although you could take me with you, Chris. I can travel too. You know, it's like, hey, the time might be right for both of us to try to figure out what the next chapter is in the future. Yeah, and I really enjoy it. And not to blow smoke up your rear, but you're the rare breed who has an opinion, but does not also think you're a know-it-all, and you're willing to be wrong and willing to learn from your mistakes and see why things turned out the way they did, which leads us to the real final question. Mehmet 209, how the hell do you spell Pete Demolimolimolimolitis's name? Do you know that? You're not a know-it-all, but do you know how to spell his last name?
Okay, let me see if I can get it for real. Okay, I got the Pete part, all right? P-E-T-E, all right? What's so bad is I don't even know how to say his name the real way anymore. I'm so used to saying it the other way. I'm like, wait, how do you?
I'm not quite sure either.
Demolitis is what I'm going to go with.
So I'm not even sure that I have it correct in my phone, but that is not what I have here. Okay, Pete just texted confirmation. Demolitis. He goes, Sims, you were just a bit outside with yours. You were close. You had many of the right letters, not necessarily in the right
combination. I made a D-E-M instead of D-A-M. That's, yes. I had everything else right. And what's more embarrassing is I'm looking into my iPad right now, and I'm seeing his text, and I've spelled his name the correct way, and I still screwed it up. So, you know, it's what they always say, you know, I'm a blonde from New Jersey. What can I say? You know, they just don't make them always that smart that with that combination. My bad.
Right about so much.
I love killing his name, though. I love it. It really brings joy to me. They go, Pete Demolitis.
All right. Great job. Great job by the homies out there. Those were some really good questions. I'm honest, like that first question from, what was it, Stephen Brown about could this year's draft class, one team, win the Super Bowl in 2 years? I'm going to be thinking about that all the rest of the day here. I thought that was a good one. But, Chris, well done as always. Say hi to your dad, and thank you to your dad again for me. That's it.
Yep, you the man, Ahmed. Thanks for everything. Thanks for driving the ship. We'll be back. I mean, podcast Tuesday, Thursday. We're going to go back to that schedule. And to all the homies out there, keep the questions going. We are keeping every track of everything, and we're going to continue to do these throughout the offseason and, you know, try to have some fun and dive into some more teams, draft picks, free agency, and all that. But peace out to everybody. Stay safe, stay healthy. Have a good weekend. Watch the freaking Godfather, Ahmed, or you're dead to me, okay?
I forgot to tell you. I did.
What?
We'll talk about it next time. We'll talk about it next time.
Great teaser. Godfather, next week, coming. Finally, he watched it. Peace out, everybody.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble.
Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
If you went on a road trip and you didn't stop for a Big Mac or drop a crispy fry between the car seats or use your McDonald's bag as a placemat, then that wasn't a road trip. It was just a really long drive. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
At participating McDonald's.